Hi everyone, I'm Mark Esper. Welcome to No Spoiler Reviews, the podcast for movie reviews with the surprises left in. If you ever felt like you've already seen the film by just reading a review or had the story spoiled by its trailers, then this is the podcast for you. In this episode, you'll find all the latest movie news and no spoiler reviews, including Karen Gillan in Gunpowder Milkshake, Scarlett Johansson in Black Widow, James Gunn's revitalized The Suicide Squad, and a Blu-ray review of Walter Hill's seminal 1980s classic, The Driver. So if that's your kind of thing and you don't like knowing the ending before you start, then let's get started with Karen Gillan, Lena Headley, So if that's your kind of thing and you don't like knowing the ending before you start, then let's kick off with Karen Gillan, Michelle Yeoh, and Angela Bassett in Navarre Papachado's Gunpowder Milkshake. In Gunpowder Milkshake, Karen Gillan is Sam, an abandoned daughter to a contract killer mother, as played by Lena Headey. Deciding to pick up the family trade, Paul Giamatti plays her handler, Nathan, and everything seems to be fine. That is, until one day, Sam decides to go rogue. Sent to kill a man who has stolen from Nathan's firm, Sam takes pity on him when she learns he needed the money as a ransom for his kidnapped daughter. Agreeing to handle the exchange in his place, everything goes sideways when Nathan dispatches extra hitmen to return the money. With three of Nathan's hitmen lying dead and millions of unretrievable dollars now turned to ash, how is Sam going to make things right with a destitute kid on her arm? Well, let's find out. Whilst clearly operating in the same twilight yet pastel neon-coloured world as John Wick, director Navarre Papachado's Gunpowder Milkshake relies on that association a little too heavily for comfort, gamely kicking off with a John Parry harpsichord motif that immediately echoes seminal TV show The Persuaders. In moving the action to the library, which performs the same function as John Wick's hotel, we quickly find ourselves back in a Keanu Reeves-like landscape. Books can be loaned out containing specific firearms, and Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, and Carla Gugino all get to chew disapproving amounts of scenery as Sam brings trouble to their off-the-shelf armory. However, this is where the movie really wants to take us. The bad guys are going to get blown away by the girls, and I'm all for it. However, in its attempt to positively promote its girls doing it for themselves theme, a lot of things get lost in the formula, and the first casualty is a sense of real jeopardy. A bit like director Edgar Wright's Baby Driver, where the whole thing runs so much on rails with too many pop songs, none of Gunpowder Milkshake's characters get to draw any genuine breath. Couple that with a further fall into eclipse where you can not only predict what's going to happen but what people are going to say, and the proceedings become a coffin lid that shuts itself. All of which, it has to be said, is not the fault of the decent cast. In a bowling jacket on loan from Kill Bill's Uma Thurman, Cara Gillan comfortably occupies the movie's protagonist Sam, as does jaded Charlie's Angels, Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, and Carla Gugino. And yet none of them get to be stretched by a plot that achingly plays to their back catalogue. With the boys relegated to papier-mâché moving targets, only Paul Giamatti gets to deliver in a non-taxing role as Ian McShane from John Wick. And whilst I approve the multitudinous slaughter of toxic masculinity, it's here where Navarre Papachado's third feature misses its big-budget opportunity by a mile. By later ramping up its increasing desire to be a feminist call to arms, and by that I mean girls punching and kicking harder than the guys, Gunpowder Milkshake's predictable yet quirky charm quickly falls flat. Whereas Atomic Blonde got it right with Charlize Theron facing down properly formidable opponents, none of the fall-down-upon-request types here adds any flavour to a formula that's so clearly out on loan. See Gunpowder Milkshake now on Netflix US and other territories where available. So, having created a bit of a frothy opening with Gunpowder Milkshake, let's now check out what Marvel has done in their latest origin story starring Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. While seamlessly posing as a 1990s American family, David Harbour and Rachel Weisz are parents to Scarlett Johansson's Natasha and Florence Pugh's Yelena. However, when their cover is blown, they flee to Cuba, where the girls are split up to be trained as assassins in Russia's ominous Red Room, as controlled by Ray Winston's General Dracov. Years later, and with several opening chapters of the Avengers storyline having elapsed, Natasha is now a wanted fugitive. However, Yelena knows where she can be found, and she has a compelling purpose for doing so. In previously tracking down a rogue Black Widow from the Red Room, Yelena has discovered that Dracov is controlling their minds with a chemical agent with which she has the antidote. So, can the sisters free the minds of their fellow assassins without getting killed themselves? When Scarlett Johansson's Natasha Romanoff disappeared at the end of the Avengers movies, a big-budget movie exploring the origins of this fan favorite would seem to have been long on the cards. And now here it is in Black Widow. Boasting a decent cast and the usual high-octane set pieces that you would expect from a Marvel movie, Black Widow is no poor cousin to what's gone before. But then again, nor is it particularly fresh. Looking back at Scarlett Johansson's character in the previous Marvel movies, hers was always the matter-of-fact voice that kept things grounded with a tactile display of martial arts skills over superpowers. Yet folded into a story of a disparate family of assassins who must reunite for the greater good, that critical drop-dead voice is gone. Instead, Marvel newcomer Florence Pugh as Yelena takes on that role, and in doing so she runs away with the film. In fact, if we cut to the chase here, there is a very real danger that both she and David Harbour's comically boorish wannabe father steal the show. Drunk on his supposed fame as Russia's equivalent to Captain America, David Harbour is the movie's vital comic relief, and Florence Pugh outshines Scarlett Johansson in the accent and attitude stakes. And that's maybe the plan. Looking at interviews in the trade papers, there seems to be a definite intention that that would be the case. But in doing so, it's to the detriment of Scarlett Johansson's character. Shorn of any real life or death sacrifices to consider, Black Widow is a movie that curls up into a James Bond-like ball in its third act. With Ray Winston doing a more than decent job at a Russian general who has outgrown his rank, you can't help feeling his character has heavily been borrowed somewhere between the pages of the Red Sparrow script or one of Ian Fleming's novels. Rachel Weisz works well with the outline of Melina that she's given to fill in, and the film works at its best when their dysfunctional family of convenience squabbles like a real one. However, when the film really starts to train its lens on the receding figure of Scarlett Johansson's posterior, or folks walking against explosions become the formula, then it really starts to break down into its clear constituent ingredients. In short, Black Widow is a film that gives you everything you expect and nothing you don't. And if you're looking for something that ticks those boxes, then I can guarantee they will explode on cue. However, if you're looking for a swan song that delves a bit deeper into Black Widow's rationale and backstory of betrayal and abuse, then this isn't it. That would be Red Sparrow with Jennifer Lawrence. So, if you'd like to see Black Widow, you can check it out now on Disney Plus's Premier Access for an extra $20 to its ongoing monthly subscription fee. So let's change gears a bit from the latest releases and have a look at some remastered classics on Blu-ray that you may or may not be familiar with. In this month's episode, I thought I'd do director Walter Hill's classic thriller, The Driver, with Ryan O'Neill, Isabel Ajani, and the incomparable Bruce Dern on Blu-ray. Released in 1978, The Driver got a fair mauling from the critics at the time. With a central hero that's so anti-heroic to the point of being characterless, I can see why the film's style jarred so much compared to the films of the time. I mean, this is only 1 year after Star Wars, and I'm reasonably sure most film companies and audiences still had stardust in their eyes from that one. But not Walter Hill. Director of such films as 48 Hours, which introduced the world to Eddie Murphy, and also a writing credit on Ridley Scott's Alien, it always seems to me that Walter Hill's movies have a clear sense of where they want to be, and damn the zeitgeist or whatever's selling well at the moment. And so it is with The Driver. In it, Ryan O'Neill plays a getaway driver in 1970s Los Angeles. Solely interested in living a quiet existence between jobs, he is economic with his words as he is fast with his cars. However, when two of his clients are late during a casino raid, he is finally recognized by one of the patrons, played by Isabel Ajani. Add to this an uncomprisingly selfish cop, as played by Bruce Dern, and the driver is a claustrophobic three-hander that barrels down its own highway unconcerned. Dern knows that O'Neill is his guy, and also that Ajani's silence is protecting him, but he won't stop at any means to catch the cowboy that can't be caught. Add to this some of the best on-screen car chases you're ever likely to see, and we can start ticking off the long list of films that this movie has influenced. That said, as an exercise in minimalism, The Driver's sparsity of dialogue, exposition, and warmth was way ahead of its time. If you had to sum up the atmosphere of the film and its characters in one single word, it would be unapologetic. Ryan O'Neill's driver doesn't explain why he does what he does, Ajani's player doesn't justify her silence, and Bruce Dern makes no concessions to being civil or in any way fair. These are characters who just are. That's the way they operate, and irrespective of whatever else is happening, this is the dance that each of them have committed themselves to. And you can see it in each actor's performances. Ryan O'Neill glares hurtfully at the character as if on the brink of a tearful explosion. Ajani is so diffident and cool that she's beyond approachable. And Bruce Dern is the fiery blowtorch who's determined to burn their respective worlds down. Echoing these performances is Walter Hill's filmmaking. Coming at you from an age before CGI, the car chases and the camera work here are both off the hook. Sodium streetlights streak in the rearview mirrors as hubcaps legitimately fly off cornering cars. And cinematographer Philip H. Lathrop allows the film's lens to judder so every impact is felt. Suffice to say that where the only stationary object is Ryan O'Neill's implacable expression, Nicholas Winding Refn's 2004 Drive owes everything to this movie. However, instead of talking about how the driver defined Drive or Jatham Statham's arrival in Luc Besson's The Transporter, let's look back through time at somebody whose very essence mirrors what the driver is all about, Steve McQueen. From its visceral commitment to real-life car chases to its withdrawn central character, the driver positively aches with the ghostly presence of Steve McQueen. And that's not to do any disservice to Ryan O'Neill, because pound for pound, it's right up there with his best performance in Peter Bogdanovich's Paper Moon. But in the same way that Richard Gere is beyond perfect for American Gigolo, the driver also unquestionably belongs to Ryan O'Neill's presence. Again, presently ahead of its time, it's a tale that isn't interested in too much cat and mouse. Like Michael Mann's evergreen heist movie Heat, the cops know where the robbers are and vice versa. It's just about each side trying to push the other one into a risk too many. In fact, here you go. As a side note, check out how many times each of the characters blink in the movie. Hardly ever. And that's the level of tension that Walter Hill's Driver is operating at. So, definitely check it out now on Blu-ray, and for my money, I would suggest you track down the €14 2014 Studio Canal edition with the black and yellow artwork. The transfer is gorgeous, the sound is nice and clear, and I'm reasonably sure it's not missing anything compared to the Twilight Time Blu-ray edition at €74. €74? Really? For a Blu-ray? Okay. Well, now in our last of our no-spoiler reviews for this month's episode, let's check out whether James Gunn's sequel to 2016 Suicide Squad is dead on arrival or reborn in the USA. After director David Ayer's disappointing Suicide Squad in 2016, a movie which comprises of one decent act and two dreadful ones, you could be forgiven for thinking that the Suicide Squad were dead and buried. But intellectual property never really stays dead for long in Tinseltown. You see, after his run of success with Guardians of the Galaxy, director James Gunn was swiftly dropped from all things Marvel after some embarrassing tweets surfaced on the internet. Promptly out of work and out of love, DC Comics instead picked up the phone to him and offered Gunn the sequel to David Ayer's flawed first film. The result is The Suicide Squad, which simultaneously picks up and abandons where David Ayer's left off. Plot-wise, Viola Davis is back as Amanda Waller, whose appetite for disposing of agents is seconded only by Judi Dench's tenure in the Bond franchise. And this time she sends the Suicide Squad to the island nation of Corto Maltese. Promised lighter sentences, the team must destroy a Nazi-era laboratory called Jotunheim, which holds a secretive experiment known as Project Starfish. All good so far? Great. Because to go any deeper than that immediately takes us into some delicious spoiler territory. Let me just say that within the first 10 minutes, you'll know that it's not just Viola Davis who isn't taking any prisoners. You see, with the bar set at a deliberate R rating, this is not a movie for the kids. In fact, with its super green tinged palette and 1970s-like topographic nods to Sam Peckinpah's The Dirty Dozen, this is unquestionably a confident movie that stomps over where David Ayer's movie Fear to Tread. Whereas 2016's debut felt like a nervy first foray, James Gunn has brought panache by the chum bucket load for 2021. So yes, whilst there is infrequent gore on display, I'd rather suggest that the R rating is for you to readjust your expectations, because this sequel is set for fun and not stun. Also, being able to blend songs into the action in a way that Zack Snyder only wishes he could, each scene moves at a pace akin to an Edgar Wright movie. With a veritable smorgasbord of mostly new and recharged characters, the scale and surprise of Mr. Stay Puft from Ghostbusters has now got some serious competition in the scale and surprise stakes. The CGI effects are completely on point, and Sylvester Stallone's Nanoue / King Shark very nearly steals the show in a way that Vin Diesel's Groot does in The Guardians of the Galaxy. So, with Idris Elba chewing up the expositional duties left by Will Smith, and Margot Robbie properly unchained to drop more than just F-bombs, this Suicide Squad is a prime example of what James Gunn can do when he's let off the Marvel cookie cutters. In a movie that is unashamedly loud, dumb, gory fun, this is a film that performs two much-needed exorcisms. That being one, the aforementioned first Suicide Squad movie, and two, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So whilst the trade papers might be questioning the logic of releasing it theatrically and online at the same time, I think this is a movie that will pick up both speed and appeal once it hits the broader channels of Amazon and iTunes. This is because in that rarest of clubs where the sequel demolishes its debut feature, DC now has a movie that carries cult pedigree and also vindicates their philosophy of letting directors do what the hell they want. Prepare to nom nom, repeatedly. And that about wraps it up for this episode. To do a quick recap, we reviewed Gunpowder Milkshake, Marvel's Black Widow, DC's new Suicide Squad, and the rescan Blu-ray of Walter Hill's seminal classic, The Driver. So if you like what you heard and you fancy having some more no-spoiler reviews delivered to your favourite listening device, then please consider subscribing. Please tell your friends, your family, and anyone else who you know who loves movies. Please hit the bell, smash the like, and share the podcasts. It really does make a difference, and we do appreciate your support. That said, if there's a recent movie that you've missed or haven't heard us cover, then why not download some of our previous podcasts or drop us a line at info@nospoilerreviews.com so we can include it in an upcoming episode. Until then, please keep safe, take all reasonable precautions, and I wish you all the very best for a spoiler-free time. Look forward to seeing you on September the 14th. Is it time for Bond yet? Maybe? Let's see. All the best. Bye.